Thank you for your patience. And tonight's topic is spiritual cultivation and New Year aspirations. So how does it affect? Normally, when a new year begins, we'll always make aspirations or resolutions like that. Right? So anyway, without taking much time, I think as usual, let us take refuge, all right, and observe the precept. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Today's topic is a bit different, more general. We are more interested in spiritual cultivation and how you make use of your New Year aspiration to help you walk along the path of Dhamma so that this spiritual cultivation can really, really comes about. This topic is very unique and very important, if you understand, because not everybody understand what spiritual cultivation is. If you don't have clear understanding of what spiritual cultivation is, then the second part, New Year aspiration, you can only make certain aspiration that fulfill mainly your mundane challenges or wishes. In order to develop proper understanding of what this spiritual cultivation is all about, we need to go back to the Buddha's teaching. All of the essential teaching that the Buddha teach over the 45 years after his enlightenment. This essential Dhamma are very important. And the most important one are, of course, the core teaching, or what we call the essential teaching of the Buddha. And he keep on reminding all the monks at that time, even before his passing away, or when he passed into Parinibbana, he mentioned this famous advice, Appamadeta Sampadeta. He said, you strive on with heedfulness. How do you do that? You have to understand what is heedfulness. To be heedful is to be ever mindful. Then you have to use that mind that is ever mindful to cultivate the meditation as taught by him. Namely, it's the Noble Eightfold Path. This clear understanding will help you in your subsequent cultivation. Like the Buddha explained, there are three phases of Dhamma. I better write it down. Phase one is what? Yes. So there are three phases of Dhamma. Dhamma. So first phase, the Buddha called it Pariyatti. What is the meaning, Pariyatti? What are you supposed to cultivate or develop? The learning of the teaching of the Dhamma. So this one is learning of the doctrine. Teaching of the doctrine. So this phase one is very important. If you don't develop it well, you cannot move on to the second phase. The second phase of Dhamma is what? Pati. What is this? Putting the Dhamma into cultivation in daily life. Means after you have understood what this Dhamma is, then you put it into practice. Putting it into cultivation. In daily life. Because it has to be part of your life for it to be relevant. So you have to put it into practice in daily life. Not just go to retreat, do all the formal meditation, get all the meditative experience, or what they call good state of mind, thinking that is meditation. But the real meditation, when you understand under phase one, is not just formal meditation. It is your daily mindfulness, the four foundation of mindfulness, especially the part on sati sampajana, means you must have daily mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in your daily activity. Then the last one is the third phase. What is it? Pativeda. What is this? What is this phase? No. Realization is here. When you cultivate, you can realize and become enlightened. This is a fruition. Fruition of your hard work. Or cultivation. Means you reap the reward. This fruition is reaping the reward of your cultivation. This third phase of Dhamma, like we went through, is the best. After that, you can really live life to the fullest. You can live life with full understanding. Then no more suffering. means you live the life of an enlightened being, a noble one. Yeah. So this is your reward. Yeah? Friction or reward. In order to cultivate the Dhamma, means to develop your spiritual cultivation, we need to have a clear understanding of Pariyatti, phase one. So just now I already gave you a hint. The Buddha, before his passing away, Parinibbana, he reminded all the monks, strive on with heedfulness. Apamadena Sampadeta. So we need to understand what this heedfulness is, otherwise you cannot move. So what is heedfulness? What is heedfulness? Heedfulness is what? You can relate it to Dhammapada, verse 23. Verse 23, what does it say? The constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one who hold on to these two cultivation, they will realize the bond-free, the supreme bond-free Nibbana. So that is what apamada or heedfulness is all about. So first requirement is ever mindful. Plus, cultivate. The meditation as taught by the Buddha. Meditation as taught by the Buddha. And what is this meditation as taught by the Buddha? What is this? This is under the fourth noble truth, Noble Eightfold Path. Okay? That's why he used the word constantly meditative. Means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Ever mindful. That's why all of meditation, when you want to start, you have to train your mind to be ever mindful. Initially, to train it to be mindful is very, very difficult. But to be ever mindful is extremely difficult, I tell you. Especially in the midst of living daily life, when you have to attend to so many things. Like just now, Brother Gan in the car told me, he said, it's a great challenge to cultivate when you are still working. Every day, during the weekday, you got to go to office 9 to 5. It's a great challenge. But I told him, if you understand what is meditation, then there is no problem. It's only challenging when you don't understand. Because meditation, like the Buddha said, you can cultivate in any posture, any place, any time. And it has to be done actually in daily life, in the midst of living. So if you cannot meditate when you are in the midst of living life, means your meditation is not what the Buddha taught. If you cannot be ever mindful throughout the day and heedful, that's why the Buddha used the word heedful. To be heedful means to be ever mindful to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And within this Noble Eightfold Path, all his teachings are there. Then the other thing that we come across is Dhammapada verse 183. Remember? This is the famous advice of all the Buddha. Karana. Of all Buddhas. So if you want to be successful in cultivating the spiritual cultivation, in developing this spiritual cultivation, you must heed the advice of the Buddha. What is the advice of the Buddha? What is it? There are three things, isn't it? avoid all evil, not only evil, all evil. Then cultivate virtue, goodness. Cultivate virtue or goodness or wholesomeness. Then the last one is purify your mind. And what is this purify your mind? This is meditation, correct? So you have to understand all this very clearly. How do you avoid all evil? How do you cultivate virtue? Of course, the five precepts is the minimum. You keep your five precepts. But how do you keep your five precepts? Sorry, five precepts. How do you keep them? What must you do? Chanting. To cultivate the five precepts, you don't only chant or renew your precepts. You chant and renew your precepts. It's just an aspiration or resolution. But are you cultivating the five precepts? You have to train your mind, isn't it? So in order to cultivate five precepts, you have to train your mind. Train mind to be ever mindful. So everything link back. To Dhammapada verse 23, you realize or not? Without mindfulness, you cannot see your mental intention. And without understanding what is evil, you cannot cultivate the precept. The three evil root must be understood. That's why the essential teaching, you must develop understanding. Then when you understand what these three evil roots what these three evil roots are, then you can deal with it. Means you can develop the mindfulness to be aware whenever these evil roots arise or come about. Evil roots are roots of all evil. They will make you very evil. That's why you cannot have these three type of roots or mind state within your mind. Greed, hatred and delusion. Greed include all of your craving, desire, your lust, covetousness and all those things. Even your selfishness is part of greed. So training your mind to be ever mindful is the first part of this heedfulness, to be heedful. Then cultivating Noble Eightfold Path is what? What is Noble Eightfold Path? Noble Eightfold Path is to develop the Noble Eightfold Path factors. The first one is what? Right view with regards to what? Four Noble Truths is one of them, but within the Four Noble Truths, you have this Noble Eightfold Path. The first one is right view. There are three great spiritual laws that govern life and existence. If you don't understand them, you cannot live life. That's why you must have right view to start with. Right view with regards to the first spiritual law, which is law of karma. That's why it's very important. Then the second one is Chitta Niyama, law of the mind. Law of the mind explains to you clearly how you function as a human being, how this mind arises and pass away, how it develops all the various dependent origination links. That's why the teaching is Paticca Samuppada, the dwelling dependent origination. So the second right view is to understand how your mind functions. Then everything that is within this Chitta Niyama, the law of the mind, like your thought process, that's why it's about the five aggregates of form and mind. And when you use thought and develop energy field, you go into the psychic field. This is also part of the nature's law of this mind. If you use it to develop mindfulness to go beyond thought, then you can develop the supramundane understanding, the awakening, and you can connect back to your true mind, your true nature. So this law of mind, citta niyama, is very important. It not only teaches you dependent origination and wisdom, it also allows you to understand all the nature's law that governs all of mind process, whether it's the thinking mind, mundane mind, or the true mind, or the awareness state, sati. Then the third right view is Dhamma Niyama. And Dhamma Niyama is where the Four Noble Truths come in, the essential Dhamma come in, the three evil roots, the five hindrances of mind, the five spiritual faculty that can actually enhance your cultivation. That's why you will come to know you have to cultivate the five spiritual faculty in order to overcome the hindrance. And how to cultivate spiritual faculty, the Buddha recommend one. Yeah? How you will develop spiritual faculty. Yeah? The pancha indriyana, indriyas. How? Every day you do. How you do? Your puja. Develop the faith. That's how you pay respect, develop mindfulness. Then you develop the faith through understanding who the Buddha is and how special he is and his teaching, how he can bring about awakening. Then you have virya, understand? Then you determine, it motivate you to walk this way. That's why sadha virya, followed by sati. Then when sati stabilize, it become ever mindful. Ever mindful. And when this one develop until very stable, it develop into samadhi, which is the fourth spiritual faculty. Then with sati and samadhi, your mind is different. No thought, collected, unwavering, very stable. You can see things as they are. It can awaken to the truth and the reality. That's why direct knowledge and vision of the reality, jnana dasana. Then it arises wisdom, which is the last of the five spiritual faculties. So all the teaching are interrelated. You only need to understand how to develop it. So the first Noble Eightfold Path factor of right view is very important. So the three spiritual law that brings about the whole teaching. Then what is cultivating, avoiding all evil, cultivating virtue and purifying your mind? This is actually the meditation. The advice of the Buddha is a meditation and how you meditate. The Buddha, under the fourth noble truth, what did he tell you? He said there is a path, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate it, it will bring about the enlightenment in the here and now, cessation of all suffering. And that is the meditation. So Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. Means if you have Noble Eightfold Path, you would have avoided all evil, you would have cultivated virtue, and you would have developed wisdom. True or not? Right view will allow you to understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. That it will condition you never to go against the law of karma. That's why you must cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And when your right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood are in place, means you are incapable of negativity. You are cultivating virtue. That's why these two advice you already fulfill. Understand? Then with your right effort to constantly abandon the unwholesome action, thought and speech that you have arisen. Then later on with the wisdom and the understanding and the stability of mindfulness, you can prevent all this negative state from arising. Then after that, the last two right effort is to develop all the virtue, means all the right thought, right speech and right action that you have yet to cultivate and develop. Then the final right effort is to refine upon them, perfect them, so that All of your actions, speech, and thought process and livelihood, they follow the advice of the Buddha, Noble Eightfold Path. Then you develop mindfulness to train your mind to be ever mindful, so that this meditation, which is mindfulness based, no more thought based, can lead to the direct seeing. Just like the previous Dhamma talk that we had, knowing and seeing, remember? Sabba Asavak Sutta. The Buddha said destruction of asavak or defilement can only take place in one who knows and sees, not in one that doesn't know and doesn't see. So the seeing is the direct seeing with the silent mind, without thought. That's why the Dhamma is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. If you cannot have direct seeing, there is no understanding, there is no wisdom. So that's why destruction of asava can only arise in one who knows and sees, not otherwise. So all of the teaching, you realize, they are all interconnected, interrelated. Then after right effort is right mindfulness and right samadhi. This is about meditation. No more thought-based. After that, you don't use effort anymore. You meditate with awareness, the silent mind. You do not interfere. It's okay. I think because I speak too loud sometimes. Yeah. So, Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. Always remember, whatever meditation you do, in the name of meditation, if it does not bring you back to Noble Eightfold Path cultivation, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Understand? Not? When they tell you, you focus, you concentrate, you can see light, you can experience this type of fantastic enlightenment and awakening, then you check. What are the other path factors? Any right view to allow me to understand life or not? All of the nature's law that governs life existence, is it there? Otherwise, I don't know how to live life. Then does it teach me how to arise the right thought, right speech, right action, to avoid all evil and do good? Otherwise, I will still be very crude in the name of enlightenment just because of fantastic meditation experience. Then you will understand clearly. If you don't have clear understanding, you are actually wasting your time. All of the meditation you do will lead you to something else, not to the Noble Eightfold Path awakening. Yeah. Noble Eightfold Path is a very complete meditation, and it has to be done with understanding. So, right mindfulness. Within right mindfulness, you have the four foundations of mindfulness. Satipatthana Sutta, cultivation. Satipatthana, as you know, in the Sutta, the Buddha said, Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for leading to the right path, to the enlightenment in the here and the now. For liberation of mind, leading to the awakening. Yeah. Namely, the four foundations of mindfulness. So this whole of the teaching is very comprehensively stated in the Tipitaka or in other suttas. But the trouble with cultivator and practitioner is they just take one part. Yeah. They focus on meditation. They focus on four foundations of mindfulness. Yeah. Then later on, they become gullible. They think the method and the technique define the meditation. Oh, this is vipassana. They go and do. And who is doing? The thought is actively doing, noting and doing all those things. And every time when you do that noting or follow the instruction to do that method or technique. You think you are meditating. Yeah. That can happen if you are gullible, if you don't understand clearly phase one Dhamma, Pariyatti. So now you understood what the Buddha meant by apamada, heedfulness. So whenever you go for meditation or retreat, the first thing you check is, in the name of meditation, what am I doing there? Am I just following instruction and doing things that I don't understand? Or am I training my mind to be ever mindful? Because you have to start from there, understand that? If you don't have mindfulness and stabilize it to be ever mindful, you are heedless, the Buddha said. Heedless means what? You are seldom mindful. This includes your daily life now. He is talking about the whole of life, daily, not only when you are at the retreat. So if you are heedless, Dhammapada verse 21 state clearly, heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. Spiritually you are dead. So very easy to conclude. If I go and attend retreat or meditation classes, if I am there not to train my mind to be mindful leading to the continuous mindfulness or ever mindful in daily life, then I cannot be heedful. That is as if I am dead, spiritually dead. Then what is meditation all about? Means you don't understand meditation. So that's why I said the real meditation is daily mindfulness. Using it to cultivate noble evil bomb. It's only in the daily life that you arise your thought process. You arise your speech to interact with people. You have to do a lot of action in life. And you have to live your life. That's why right view will condition the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And this is what life is all about. If you cannot have all these power factors in daily life, there is no meditation. That's why everything has to start with sati. Without sati, you can never be ever mindful. And when you are never ever mindful, you cannot be heedful. Because that is the criteria to start meditation. That's why I used to tell you, not until you have developed this training of the mind to be ever mindful, the real meditation haven't started. That's why in one of the talk I remember, if I'm not wrong, it's in the Wu Ping Ching Sir class. That's why the Heart Sutta book, when it come out, it will be very helpful. Hopefully, next Monday we are going to get it. Means in about 3 days' time. Then those going for the retreat, you attend the briefing on the 7th of March, then you will get a copy. Otherwise, you have to wait till after the retreat. Inside that book, all of the Heart Sutta teaching that we went through for almost 1+ year to 2 years, all the notes, the short notes are compiled, and I edited it. Then we proofread and did all those things. Now, it has turned out to be a beautiful, like what they call, like your handbook, understand? To the Christian, it's like the Bible you carry. But this one is more than the Bible. This is the essence, the handbook. Within there, somebody actually asked that question, one of the sharing. Because after hearing what I used to repeat and explain, not until you have trained your mind to be ever mindful and used it to cultivate noble evil path in daily life, the real meditation hasn't begun. Then she asked me, Bertil, do you mean after attending all the retreat, all the so-called meditation classes and all those things, I have yet to start the real meditation? What do you think? What do you think? Because when you don't understand, really, you haven't started. That's why that understanding phase one is very important. When you understand, phase two become very simple. You can just zero into it. Like I say, when you go for retreat or meditation, or you do your own self-retreat or self-cultivation, you straight away check these two criteria. First, am I training my mind to be ever mindful? Have I succeeded? If I have succeeded, then am I using it to cultivate noble eightfold path? Do I understand the whole cultivation? And all these are very simple, isn't it? You refer to the advice of Buddha, write this down at home, then check your cultivation. If it doesn't bring you back to all this understanding, then you are not developing the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Yeah. That's why without sati, you are as if dead. For sati is life. Without sati, you are heedless. Heedless are as if dead. Then the other important point about sati is without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma, the second factor of enlightenment. If you cannot investigate the Dhamma, you don't understand whether this Dhamma that the Buddha have taught you is the truth or not. Because you cannot put them to test. You cannot investigate into them. And you need sati to do that. That's why without sati, there is no Dhamma investigation. There is no confirmation. There is no confidence in you. Without that confidence, your virya cannot be strong. So virya is a third enlightenment factor. That's why without sada, there is no Dhamma Vichaya. If you don't go through this Dhamma Vichaya, your faith cannot be strong. Virya cannot be there, the third factor, enlightenment, not there. And without virya, pity, very difficult to come by, the fourth factor, enlightenment. And without pity, stabilizing into pasati, the fifth factor, enlightenment, cannot come about. Without sati, stabilizing until unwavering and collected, samadhi cannot come about. And without sati and samadhi, you cannot see things as they are. There is no wisdom. So your equanimity factor of enlightenment also cannot come about. The one that is a conditioned state one is different. So all these points to you, the direction of clarity of meditation is to have mindfulness, to have sati. That's why that is the first factor of enlightenment. And sati is part of the five spiritual faculty. That's why you have to start with the five spiritual faculty. Because the Buddha said the reason why you cannot meditate, you are not peaceful, is because of the mental hindrance. And the reason why the mental hindrance are there, so strong and so powerful, is because you don't have the five spiritual faculty. Understand not? Chicken and egg story. So actually the whole of meditation is just spiritual faculty. From there, everything begins. Because the five spiritual faculty actually will lead to the seven factors of enlightenment. Then if you don't have this understanding, whatever aspiration you make, New Year aspiration or resolution, it only serves your mundane need. It doesn't serve your spiritual need. Coming to this second part, spiritual cultivation leading to what they call the understanding of how to make this New Year aspiration. Most people, they like to review what they do after the end of 1 year. So it is something useful actually. That's why after about a year, you have a relook into your life. Then for those who are serious, very well disciplined, they will make New Year aspiration or resolution. Then because they are disciplined, they are serious, they keep to it. And then you can progress very fast. Yeah. But you must understand how aspiration can bring about fulfillment of what you want. Otherwise, like a parrot, you make aspiration. I want to be enlightened before the end of this year. or I want to progress until my mind is ever mindful throughout the day. before the end of this year. Easy to write aspiration, no? But to make it come true is another understanding. How can you realize that aspiration is very important? How do you make aspiration? Based on what you have learned. Our closing puja, the Buddha gave you one hint. How did the Buddha teach you to make the aspiration? You chant almost every session, closing puja. What do you chant? Ipmina punyang kamina. What does it mean? Punya is merit. Ipmina punyang kamina. By the power of this merit that I have cultivated. Then what do you aspire? May it arise the causes and condition for me to always avoid the foolish and the heedless. Meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized in the here and now. And this is how you make aspiration. You invoke the power of merits. Merits means what? Your perfection, your cultivation, your goodness, your virtue, your kindness, your pleasantness. So in order to make aspiration come true, to be effective, you need merits, understand? That's why you need blessings, you need merits. And to have merits, you must avoid all evil and do good. Cultivate all the virtue. You still have to meditate, understand? The more serious you are, the more committed you are, the higher your virtue is. You must be serious about your precepts. You must be serious about how you train your mind to be ever mindful. So that this cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, which will bring about the fulfillment of meditation and the fulfillment of the advice of the Buddha, can materialize, can come true. And this whole exercise is a very serious commitment. If you don't do that, without the merits, the blessings and the wholesomeness, your karmic obstruction, your karmic negativity will condition a lot of karmic friction, negative karmic friction and obstruction, to obstruct you throughout the way. Every time you want to meditate, the obstruction will come. Because you don't have this condition. But if you make this aspiration to avoid the foolish and the heedless, then the probability is higher that when you make the aspiration. But when you make the aspiration just like a parrot and you are not serious, you always invoke by the power of this merit, may it arise a causing for me to avoid all, avoid the foolish or the heedless, and meet out with the wise and enlightened. But you don't even know who are the foolish, who are the heedless, and who are the wise and the enlightened one. You every time mix them up. Then how are you going to allow that wish to come true? Condition manifests in front of you, you cannot see. All those that take you for all the, what they call, mundane happiness and joy, or you say these are the, what they call, right people that I must associate with. And you don't know that they are actually heedless people, foolish people. Because they are wasting their time. They are not developing the spiritual understanding to take care of their life. That's why I always tell Buddhists, I say, if you want to claim to be a true disciple of the Buddha, means call yourself a Buddhist, you must be worthy of it. How to be worthy of it? How? At least, what must you do? You must heed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. Are you doing that? If you are not doing that and you call yourself a Buddhist, someone argue with people, I'm a Buddhist, you know. I'm a disciple of the Buddha. You know? Oh, I know the Four Noble Truths. You know? So what? Your action, speech, and thought process are so crude. The way you live your life is still so crude. You are hardly mindful or heedful. Most of the time you are heedless. You are full of negativity, evil roots. And you cannot see. You somehow say, I'm Buddhist. I read Dhammapada. I read the life story of the Buddha. I know who the Buddha is. He was born where? He was the prince. He saw the four signs. So on. Because the important one is to heed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. And to avoid all evil, to keep the five precepts. Five precepts also you find so difficult to keep. Sometimes you can't even remember the precept. And worse is, most people don't understand the precept. Yeah, the precept, when you say panatipata viramani sikha padang samadhi yami, the meaning is very deep. Why is it the word sikha padang samadhi yami always repeated? Because that one is standard for all precept. You start off by, I undertake the training rule to abstain from the precept. First precept is to abstain from all killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. You undertake the training rule, means what? You have to exercise restraint and develop mindfulness to be ever mindful that you will not violate this precept. Understand? Means you train yourself not to cause harm or suffering or injury or kill any living being, including the ants, the flies, and whatever. Not to say living being or human being. And this is a very serious commitment. How many of you keep precept that way? Sometimes you try to justify. You want to add something? Alien? Yeah. Yeah, get the mic, get the mic. Oh, okay. Yeah, pass the mic. We are for the recording, huh? Then. Thank you.
I try to take the precepts very seriously.
Yes. There are people who are very serious.
Even if I'm very tempted to kill the ants, I will hold a meeting, wash my temptation.
Oh, very good, very good.
Wash my temptation very good. And tell myself they deserve to live.
Yeah. This is what awareness or mindfulness can help you. Your office. Office. I add this part. Then it will allow you to reflect. And when you have wisdom, when you have true love and compassion, your reflection is different. You will come to know every living thing, not only living being. Every living thing, including the ants, they have life. Understand? If you just, because to you is just an ant, understand? It's a nuisance, then you just kill, understand? Or you just wash it into the basin and all those things. But how many of you really take the trouble to save the ant? I have saved many, many, many. A lot of them, they thirsty, they need water. And I took them out of the glass. And sometimes it go into my honey and butter during the early days. Because they like sweet things. And how many of you really take the trouble to try to save? When you see them save, it's very interesting. There is life there. There was one fly that I saved in Anandagiri. I can tell you, this one is a very good example. I saw that fly get entangled in the food, because Thailand, the food are very oily. Then the wing, kena oil. I can feel the fear in that fly, so strong. Then straight away I look for tissue paper. Then I took that tissue paper, I knew it can absorb the oil. Then I put it near the fly, and it absorbed the oil. Then you know what happened? Suddenly the fly feel relief because the wing can fly very freer. And you know what he did or not, the fly? He just want to fly to me on my hand. Never want to leave. See? That fly can feel. Because in the midst of fear, when he is safe, he can feel. Then he stay on my hand. And then I say, okay, go. There you go. Yeah. You can find out all these things. Yeah. Then the other part is, when you have this sensitivity and love, you know how to contemplate and reflect. Each and every one of these have life, understand? If let's say, like the English story, you read this story, Lilliput and what, where he go to one island. Initially he was the giant. Then later on, he went to an island where he was a dwarf. The rest are a giant. The end, to you are like giant. You want to destroy. Finish. So likewise, the devil, some of these demons or whatever, very powerful one, I tell you, to kill a human being is like nothing, like you kill the ant. That's why you must have understanding, you must have good karma. Otherwise, you simply entangle and get into trouble. You know how to get entangled, no? Like the ant, you go and bite the giant. Or the fly, or the mosquito, you go around them and disturb them. Most of them are heedless and angry. It's a nuisance, they just smash you up. That's why you can avoid the condition, you must avoid. But living beings don't understand. But if you are lucky, you meet the cultivator, then they are very kind. They offer dana to you. Mosquito, they let you bite, and so on. If you can accept all this, of course people will tell you, hey, brother, you got dengue one, or how? Out of fear, you want to kill and harm. If the condition is like that, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But if you can avoid, you avoid. That's why your house, if you can have netting, try to have, then keep it clean. Because there are causes and conditions behind everything that arise. So this is how mindfulness, heedfulness can make a big difference to your life. And you avoid all those killing and harm, you know what happened? You got less suffering. You got less misery. You know when you smash a mosquito or a fly or any insect, you know how they die or not? They die of shock and smash out. I tell you, in future you like all those MH17, MH37, just shock and then just gone. And sometimes it's group karma. You kill people like that. You send the missile up, people just gone. Then when there's condition, when you become insect also, that one like missile come, smash you up. That's why all these are nature's law. And if you understand, it will help you. You become more sensitive. You become more mindful. You become more heedful. That's why you cannot do all these things. Then there is no more cause and condition behind. Okay, now Lian can continue. Oh, no more. You want to continue? You can. Yeah. Ah, correct.
So I will always, if I'm in that, I'm like a small ant.
Yeah.
I reverse the situation.
Yes.
I can feel
you put yourself in the shoe of the ant. Then you will feel it.
Yeah.
What if a giant did that to me? Like what I'm going to do with this ant? You can never do it.
I can never do it.
Because you can feel the pain, the shock that they are going through. So this is good. So cultivation need understanding. And you have to be serious about it. If everything also you're very selfish, just an end, why bother? Understand? Nothing wrong, because you see, pest controller, they got a livelihood. This is their livelihood. They will do it for you for a fee. But you can also exercise restraint. Like last time I remember, I was working in a university, And my job scope as an engineer, funny, I never learned this in the university that I had to take care of pests. But when I was in the university, that whole estate and property office, they call it one leg kick. You do everything. So I supposed to do maintenance and development. So they say pest control is part of maintenance, building maintenance. And also what they call safety maintenance. Because within the university, there's a lot of pests. We got a lot of quarters spread out in section 16, the jungle area, the what they call, there's a hill there. Then Lorong Jambatan also. Then section 12, section 11, and many places. Then we even have branch campus. Then they got snake, no? Cobra, python. Then they got rodents. Very serious thing. Then sometimes squirrel and all those things. Then they have beehive. Oh, that was a classic. Beehive, you have to. So I hire pest control. So I have to talk to them. I don't want you to use poison. And you have to do it as gracefully as you can, as tactfully as you can. So they put trap, understand? Then after that, I say, how you dispose it of? I don't want to know. But make sure you don't kill it in front of us or do anything of those things. So we pay them. We outsource because these are people who are willing to do it. But if you can avoid, you have to avoid, understand? Sometimes you need to exercise restraint in many, many things. That's why Sabha asked about sutta, you remember? To deal with certain defilement, you have to exercise certain understanding. So precept, you have to exercise restraint because you have undertake the training rule not to do all these things. Not to kill, not to cause harm, not to lie, not to cheat, not to deceive, not to commit sexual misconduct. Not to lie and arise the wrong speeches. Then undertake the training rule to abstain from intoxicant drugs. So you have to exercise restraint even when you are tempted, just like Sister Lian said. You are very tempted to kill because that thing is initially like a nuisance. It's such a small thing to you, it's very insignificant. But when there is no love, you cannot feel them. They also have life, even though they are just so small. Even the plant, they have life. It's a living thing. It's not a living being. You know the difference between a living thing and a living being. There's no life, real life inside, like a consciousness inside. Some of these plants, they have consciousness, but mono consciousness. Just like the sensitivity towards the sun's ray and all those things they have. That's why when you love them, the plant grow very well. When you really care for them, you have love. Like my mother, she really green hand. All the plant, no matter how, grow very well under her hand. Then after she go back to Alastair, my wife find it very difficult to manage last time. But now she learned very fast. Now she managed her own garden after my mother. Initially it was not easy. He used to come and tell me, how come mother around? Chili also become so beautiful. Really fruit also. And the ing chai or whatever. Really, that narrow strip of 1 foot by 10 feet, small patches of earth land near the fencing, she also can plant. The outside there a little bit also. Well, she plant until all the... Because they have this love. And my mother tell me, you need to talk to the plant. They really listen to you. That's why in China, the terrain is so terrible, and yet he managed to get them to grow. He said, here in Malaysia, she told me, we all really home here. All flat land on, water all nearby. They all, I got to go to the pond, take the water, carry it up the mountain hill, Then slowly go and water. And no flat land on, they got a terrace. Just small strip. And every day, non-stop, doing all these things. So that's why when you have a lot of this, what they call good karma, good blessing, good merit, then you get to have good life. You should appreciate life. You must have appreciation. Then the other thing about New Year aspiration is, I got one Dhamma friend. I think some of you know her. I think one of the Thursday class she shared. Sister... No. What her name? Ellen. Oh, you say Ellen, sorry. Ellen, yeah. You know what she did? She only joined us about 1 year, no? Last year, Chinese New Year. Slightly more than 1 year. He said last year she made that New Year aspiration or resolution. As long as she is not sick or the health is not giving her problem, she made the aspiration to attend every Thursday class to learn another Dhamma quickly so that she can understand it clearly and put it to cultivation and practice. If you start like that, it's very good because you know your limitation. But he was so grateful. Actually, last time she worked for a listed company. And immediately after she retired, there's a karma record. I was delivering a Dhamma talk in SJBA, December month, I think. And she came for the first time, you know, to listen to my talk. After the talk, she was so happy. You know, she approached me. You know. She said, "Brother Teo, can I talk to you?" I said, "Can." He said, "I'm new." He said, "I just retired. Can you recommend to me some book?" So that when I read, I can understand them just like how you share. Then I say, "Where do you stay?" I think she mentioned something like Oak Lane Road or don't know what. Oh, I say like that. I said, "It's better for you to come and attend the Thursday class meditation. You learn faster. Otherwise, I give you book also, no point. And I don't have books now. When I see you also, I don't know." Then I said, "Why not we do this? You give me your email contact. Then I will get somebody to contact you." I had in mind Mi Feng and Suyan. So finally, I think I wrote the email to her to introduce Sui An to her. And she was so determined to come, you know, because after that talk, she knew, you know, is it, "I have been looking around for Dhamma for quite a while, is it? But I couldn't find anybody who can just summarize to me all the essential teaching just in one session so clearly." Yeah. I say, "You are not the first person who tell me that. There are many who told me that." I said, "Anyway, if there is affinity, then you'll meet." So I just left it at that. And you know what happened? She really make it a point to contact Suya. And Suya, very kind, sent her some of the recording because we break for Chinese New Year. Many weeks, no class. Then send the address to her. After she listened to the recording, later on she shared and told us, she was so like full of joy, you know. Well, that type of Dhamma she has been looking for very long already. Then she determined to attend the first class. No? She checked with Sui An, checked with me when. Then on that day, you know what happened? He scared at night, he cannot find the way. He came and looked for Sui An's house so early. She arrived at 6:30. You know? The class started at 8:30. She already arrived at 6:30. See, this is a determination. Then after she attend, she make that determination, the aspiration. So when you have that sincere mind to make that aspiration and result, and you know how to invoke the power of merit, it will bring forth the condition, and it will bring forth the friction. That's why she progressed very fast though. After that, she keep on listening to the recording. Then volunteer to help in the transcript and all. Then she came out with her own pointers and notes and sent it to me for sharing. Because she liked to search the internet and develop further understanding. And during her time, that 1 year, we got so much Dhamma notes, the three turning, Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda, and the, all the various descriptions. All the notes came from her. And a few more Kayamita who are very serious. And when they are very serious, they really determine. And when they make aspiration, they are really, really committed to it. This is how you can bring to fruition. You only need to have faith, sincerity, then diligently cultivate, perseverance. The Dhamma will be there. Okay, with this, I think I will end today's talk. Huh? Then you got any Q&A, you can still ask. We still got 20 minutes. Huh? I understand this place close at 10:15. Huh? Okay, thank you so much for your patience. Okay, yeah. You all can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If you got any question, you can ask. Whatever that is not clear, you can also ask.
I run through your Thursday class.
Yeah, yeah.
You talk about metta.
Just turn this one to the other side.
You develop metta with loving kindness from the heart, the energy from the heart will go to, you bless the person, whoever you direct me.
Yeah, continue.
When you radiate metta from the heart, the energy from the heart will come and relate the person, whoever, or whichever direction you direct the mind to. The question I ask is, should it, when the energy goes up from the heart, is there a possibility when unseen being tap in the energy and come to stay in the heart?
Just to get you right, you say you heard from my talk, Thursday class talk. I didn't speak that. Wait, I explained to you. I explained that there are three ways to read it. Metta, understand? You go back and listen again. I'm very consistent. There are three ways that you can read it. Metta. First is normal people, parroting. You know what is parroting? The parrot repeat what other people repeat. Means you're not serious. May all beings be well and happy. May they be free from all suffering. You just recite, rattle like a parrot. You don't feel it. So that is the common way of radiating metta. That's why last time I remember there was one Dhamma, not really Dhamma friend yet. At that time she was very new. She just graduated. She came to Cempaka and learned meditation. She was recommended to attend my class by my physics teacher, because this girl is a niece of his, my physics teacher's good friend. She went to the class. First day, before I teach metta, my supreme method away, then she put up her hand, Q&A time. He said, I cannot read it either. He said, when I chant, I don't feel anything. I said, yeah, this is like parenting. The word parenting wake her up. I said, brother, how should I read it? I said, very simple. You must feel. You must feel the love. You must have love to read it, love. If you don't have love, you cannot read it, love. And what is love? You must know what is metta. Metta is radiating love and well-being to all beings, wishing all beings well and happy. You must have that sincerity, that feeling, that love. Then you read the metta book, they will teach you a lot of other skillful means or technique. It's like the mother who can sacrifice for their child. Because the mother's love is very sincere, no selfishness. When they love their kid, means what? They can do everything. They can go all out and protect their kid, even at the expense of their life. by risking their life, they can sacrifice. And that is what love is all about. But this is conditioned love, because your children, that's why you can go all out and do it. Or your brothers, your sister, your parents. But if it's somebody you don't know, can you still have that type of love? That's why love has many layers or levels. Conditional love means conditioned upon that relationship, I can express that love. Understand? If you have that personality, that beauty, that wealth, or that I love you, that is also conditional love. When you're no longer beautiful, no longer young, no longer have the wealth, I don't love you anymore. That type of love is selfish love. Conditional love and selfish love, they are very common in this world, because their love is dependent on something, one got a motive, one got a reason to love one another. But what is true love? True love is no opposite, no hatred, no negativity. Love is their love. The mind that has love is very different. It is just love. Then it will just radiate. And the second part is, after you can feel, you can will it out from your heart. Then when you will initially, you don't have energy on, because your heart not open yet. Understand? So you have to will it out. Willing it out from the heart, develop the skill of radiating metta. Means you have this metta within you. When there is no metta, you cannot radiate out on the sun. So you need to initially use a little bit of your willpower, which is still a little bit thought-based. May I, this body and mind of mine. That's how you feel initially, you feel. No more parenting, you feel. Be well and happy. You feel the well-being and happiness within you, every cell of you. This is the second stage of metta. Then after that, when you have enough of this metta, then you can visualize your loved one and you can radiate to them. You can will from here. May my loved ones do be well. Initially, not much strength. Like that lady that came, is it? No effect. Then after I wake her up and say, parenting, you know, I've been the second Saturday class. Last time at Chebaka was Saturday. She was so excited, the face was radiant, so happy. She put out her hand. She said, right till now, I understand what you mean. Can radiate from the heart one. When there is metta, it's so beautiful. First time she becomes so calm, so peaceful and so tranquil. And the whole metta session was so beautiful. Then I knew this lady got her past. She cultivated before. That's why later on she progressed very fast. And she can go into the four jhana very fast. And stay at the four jhana. Because past life do energy fuel her. Then later on her heart opened up. She very sensitive to energy. That's why different people different. You only need to have understanding that you know what to do. Then after you go through this second phase, when you can read it like that, then later on it becomes natural. Metta is a part of you. You don't need to will. It's inside you. You just radiate. Then there's a very soothing energy coming out. There's this metta energy. This one is not will out or no. Not the psychic field or no. Nothing. This one is the real metta from the heart. Come on. You can do that. You are already very good. I will sadhu you. Because when this metta come out, your nature, it flow, and you will know one, very soothing one, very, very powerful. All the non-human, the animals, the dog, all they can feel you. When I was in Australia, I tested it. There was one dog, very, very fierce, very big. This Aussie guy, I don't know him. I was at my second last teacher's house, actually, doing my morning meditation. Then I was very mindful. Then I radiate metta to all the beings within that whole lot, that vicinity and that town and that city. Then to all the trees, the plants, and all that have life. That's like all living things and living beings. Even the grass, the bushes, everything. Even the inanimate building, everything, the metta just flow. Then this guy walked by from far. He used to take the dog morning walk. Later on, I came to know. All of a sudden, you know what happened? That dog rushed off from his hand. He was holding the dog by the... There is one, you call it what? The dog. Something that you hold the dog. That dog was so big, it went off. And that guy panicked. He thought that dog was going to attack me. From far, he panicked. He chased after the dog. But the dog was so much faster than him. And the moment I can feel that dog, I saw them with mindfulness from far. Then when I saw that dog, I was also full of joy because I radiate metta. And that dog can feel from so far. I saw the fur. You know, the dog with the fur. And there was so much joy in the dog. Then when he approached me, I just radiate my hand. That owner rushed after the dog. Then suddenly he stopped. He saw that dog was so friendly to me, wagging the tail like anything there. And I was stroking the head here, the hair. That dog was supposed to be a very, very big and very fierce dog. The owner came near me and asked me, who are you with it? How come my dog like you? I thought he was going to attack you. Then you know what happened? After I talked to him, I said, it's okay. I said, your dog, very good dog. I said, take care of this dog. He's a very good dog. I didn't tell him it's a Dhamma dog. Then you know what happened? He want to go. No? The dog refused to go. No? He tell the dog, go, come, we go. He refused to go. No? He wagged the tail, came near me. But he can feel the energy. Then I said, it's okay. I said, you need to go because the owner wants you to go. I said, go. The moment I say go, he went. They went out. Then on the way back, this time the dog went, came. He didn't do anything. He not worried. Really. Oh, he said, okay, okay, go. And the dog came again on the way back. That's why when you have metta, it's different. That type of metta is different. Very powerful. Yeah. I cannot explain to you until you yourself have done it. Understand? We are this was 20 over years ago. 1990, I think. 24 years ago. Oh, 25 years ago, 2015. And a lot of things, if you don't have condition, I cannot remember what happened. Because the whole cultivation, the training, it just went by. And that time, nobody disturbed me. I was so peaceful. Nobody know me, nobody came to me. I only have some Dhamma friends that are close to me, cultivator. And even those people, they can't really know me. Except some of my teachers, they know. Even though they know, but they don't really understand how I cultivate. But a few of the teachers, they know I'm very different. I'm very different. And one of them can see your past and can read all those things. She asked me 3 times, do you know who are you? I don't know. Do you know who are you? I don't know. Third time he asked again, do you know who are you? I said, I don't know. Inside my heart, I said, I don't need to know. Not important, because that is not really me. I really knew. It's that segment life. Segmented life. Then later on, he asked another question. Do you know how you come? Asked me 3 times or so. First 2 times, I answer no. But the 3rd time, she asked, do you know how you come? Then she add in 1 word. You came with a very, very heavy vow. The moment she said that, I answer, I know. Because I know what that vow is. Because this lie also, I make that vow. That's why very strange. I cannot tell you how I know, but the nature knows. And this nature is so different from the mundane mind, the thinking mind. Because that one is beyond thought, beyond mind. That's why you must meditate until you can connect. You can really silence your mind, completely silent. Then only you can connect. It's not a person who connect. No. It's the mundane mind that sees, then only this one manifests. Because this one, all the while was there. It's only because you are not sensitive, you are not aware, you are not mindful, you are not quiet enough to perceive it. A very good analogy is like the silence of nature. Remember? Why can't you perceive that silence in the midst of life? Why must you wait until like middle of the night when everything is very quiet, no traffic, nothing, and then you suddenly perceive the deep silence of nature? Those who study very late on, they will understand. Where all of a sudden the vibration around their vicinity, traffic, everything like slow down until no more, then suddenly you can perceive that silence, that stillness. And during that moment, your mind must be very quiet. I was very quiet because that time I can concentrate on my study. When I study something, that time my mind, very clear or not, I can concentrate or not. It wouldn't run on my mind. It won't become sleepy. When I want to attend to something, it's very clear. That time I haven't really meditated. But my mind was already like that when I was young. So that's why it's very, very different. So not until you can train your mind until it can be so silent and so still, until the mindfulness is continuous. Initially, it's just space between thought and thought. The first thought that arises, after that, the second thought takes a while. There is a space, a gap, a silent gap between, before the next thought arises and passes away. Living beings that are heedless, most of the living beings, you think a lot, non-stop. You want to stop thinking also cannot. Now you try. Don't want to think. You try. Can you be still without thought? Even when I'm talking to you, I don't use thought. How is it possible? Because this has become a part of my nature. The mundane mind collapse. There is no more that type of mind. That nature is ever shining, ever radiating. It's part and parcel of this whole form of mind. It's connected. That's why it's ever mindful. I don't need to meditate actually, technically. That's why I go to retreat. Sometimes I sit with you because you all need motivation. I actually can go and lie down and just rest or do whatever I want. But I don't have to meditate anymore. That's why the Buddha used the word beyond training. Why must you train? But sometimes, living being cultivated like that, brother, you sit, no, I must also sit. Brother, you bow, no, I must also bow. If I don't do anything, they follow me, Bratio Lepa, we go Lepa. I actually don't go Lepa, I go and look around because I'm responsible for you, understand, when you attend the retreat. Where are you? What are you doing? I have to be responsible. That's why I make it a point to survey. And when I walk by, you don't think I just go and Lepa. I can feel. Then I will know what happened. And many, many things you all may not know. That's why it's not easy to even teach or share. You think so easy to teach meditation. Everyone is so different. No? Everyone is so weird. No? Question is okay, but to know how to teach them and guide them is real skill and wisdom. Not everybody can do that, I tell you. Most people use knowledge. You meditate like that, you focus, you concentrate. Only that matter, only that technique. You do other thing, they ask you to go back. But the meditation, like the Buddha said, can be anywhere, any place, any time, any method, any technique. We have method, technique, never define the meditation. Meditation need to be understood, then you will know how to do. But you don't understand, then what are you doing in the name of meditation? You think you meditate, you are gullible. You actually use your thought. You use your thought to interpret what the teacher say. You receive a series of instruction, method and technique to do certain things. Then you go and interpret it and do according to what you believe is the correct one. And the worst is you become gullible, thinking that you follow this instruction, you are meditating. When nobody explained to you what is meditation, what are you there for? Anybody tell you you have to train your mind to be aware, to be heedful, so that it's constantly aware, ever mindful. Then after that, use it to cultivate noble eightfold path. All your meditation and retreat, if I'm not wrong, most of it, just sit, meditate, walk, walking, sitting, doing all those things. Then hopefully one day you become enlightened. Not like that. If like that, all the frogs that sit for so long a day, they will become enlightened also. The frogs sit almost throughout the day. They are so patient, waiting for the fly, waiting for the mosquito, the tongue. That's why they are very attentive. But attentiveness without wisdom and understanding is not meditation. Mindfulness without understanding is not right mindfulness. That's why the Tai Chi people, the Qigong people, and the what they call Kung Fu people, most of their movement has a lot of mindfulness within. But it's not samasati. But they use mindfulness to train themselves in martial art, in other things, to develop their qi, then store it as tan tian and to use it differently. But the Buddha teach you mindfulness is to be silent, to be aware, to develop wisdom, nothing else, to understand life. Then when there is a sati and mindfulness, your health will naturally improve because it will connect you to your mind base, your inner true nature, that true mind. When you touch and connect, then you will understand that this form of mind is not you. There is another nature within, which is the eternal life, never born. That's why it never gets old, it never gets sick, and it never dies. Okay? So hopefully I've answered your question. This is the three level of metta. That's why when you listen, if you don't have enough understanding, you cannot get what I meant. And luckily you ask. If you don't ask, there is no condition to explain so detailed. You all must thank him. We say sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, very good. Thank you for your question. Because I seldom explain metta so detailed. Because in a meditation session, especially like Thursday class, I only got 10 to 15 minutes to give instruction. And everything has to be within that 15 to 20 minutes. Then after that, meditate for another 15 to 20 minutes. Then half the session is gone. Then when we start, we are left with only maybe another hour or so. So meditation and Dhamma is you need to understand, then you progress very fast. If you don't understand, you do. Actually, you're wasting your time. It's just like in life. If you are not focused on what you want to achieve, then you wasted your life. Then you cannot achieve anything. Where people say, work, work, work hard. When you have enough money, you will be very happy. Or you gullibly believe you work like a horse. Work until you lost your health, then you regret. It's not about working for money alone. Life is to be understood. When you understood life, when you understand life, and when you are contented with life, you don't have to work all the life, whole of your life. You have to set your priority. When your priority is set correctly, then you are more focused. To me, there is nothing more urgent than understanding life. If I don't understand life, I'm wasting my time here. I'm going through life without understanding that I suffer for nothing. That's why when I see the truth of that, I was very serious since the year 1971 when I was in Form 5. I became dead serious. That was the first time I saw the Four Noble Truths. Then I realized I don't need to search already. Then I went all out to develop the understanding. I just need somebody to explain to me what the mind is all about. And I only got that window when I was with my teacher, 1986. So likewise, there are plentiful of conditions for you to realize what you want to realize. If you are sincere, you are serious about life, then there is a lot of opportunity and possibility. You only need to have faith. The faith will drive you. Faith is very important. Without saddha, there is no virya. Without saddha virya, there is no sati, I can tell you. And without saddha, virya and sati, the spiritual faculty, you can never understand spiritual teaching. Very difficult. And without sati, you are as if dead. Without sati, you cannot be heedful. Without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma. If sati is so important, what are you waiting for? Without sati, there is no spiritual faculty. Without sati, there is no noble evil path. Without sati, you cannot cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. So sati is required everywhere. Without sati, you cannot live life. The heedless are as if dead. That Dhammapada was really strike me in the early day. I tell myself, what? No, not New Year resolution. No. That moment onward, the resolution is, I don't want to be heedless anymore. Because it is very, very dangerous to be heedless. The heedless are as if dead, no, spiritually dead. No. You know what is spiritually dead? No? No more window, no more chance to become enlightened. You want to become that type of being. I tell you. That's why strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless anymore. Okay? Yeah, we better end. No, he asked a very sincere question. Because he... I answer you now. You have to be careful. It's because, not because of what they say. It's your thought. Listen, you haven't listened. Your thought project, because you heard this before. There is fear. That fear is causing the problem, not what they tell you. What they tell you is not true. When you radiate metta, people can tap your energy. Ask them to come and tap my energy. You yourself also not heedful, you want to tap people's energy. Like people say, he can read your thought. No. He himself cannot read his own thought, he want to read your thought. Of course, I do not deny psychic people can use their will power to read your thought. But for what? How many thoughts can you read? Your own thought proliferate non-stop. You want to read people's thought. Forget about it, these are all thought-based. You're just silent. That nature which is beyond thought is so much more powerful and so much more sensitive and so much more wise that one can understand the real thing. not what your thought tell you. What your thought tell you is all the conditioning that people channel into you. And you always project and develop the fear. Well, people say they can tap my metta. People say if I'm not careful, the Mara can come in. Why you go and allow this thought to go in? This is what the Buddha said in Sabbasavak Sutta. Things that are unfit for attention, you go and give attention. The Buddha teach you the Four Noble Truths, three turning, you never pay attention. You go and pay attention to what people say. A Mara can come and tap your energy. Oh, non-human can tap your energy, can read. What are you doing? These are not the things that are fit for attention. It's not conducive for developing wisdom. It's not conducive for the destruction of asava. That's why you have to understand clearly what are you doing. And when you believe that thought, what happened to you? Like the Buddha said, things that are unfit for attention, the unarisen asava, defilement, come to be. That's why you got fear. Then you say, well, like, you're no more in that state. Like, so, it's because of that fear. When there is no fear, you are so beautiful. When there is metta building up. But how come that thought come, you already become like that? Because of the fear, the conditioning. People can tell. Why you want to go and allow all this thing to come in? Just be with your nature, silent. It will understand everything. No thought. Then no projection, no this, no that. Then the Dhamma is without words on. Then. This is a real meditation. That's why living being is always using thought. I heard. Always this word. I heard. Is it true, Brother Teo? Can teach me how to meditate. Then next question is, what must I do, Brother Teo? You will never learn. You have to investigate and find out yourself. Through what? Through the silent mind. Through sati. That's why sati is the first factor of enlightenment that will lead you to the investigation of Dhamma. Dhamma vichaya. You can understand everything. That's why I always say, the moment you understand, the moment you have sati, the moment you connect, you no need teacher. You can be your own teacher. You will understand everything. The Buddha Dhamma is all there. That's why the hateful never die. Like you are destined for enlightenment. You only need to be hateful. So difficult. Is it so difficult? Just to train yourself to be hateful. Ever mindful. To those who don't understand and not serious, it's very difficult, I tell you. But to those who are serious and have faith, it's very easy. If you understand and you are serious and you have faith, it's very easy. Okay, we better stop because the center is closing.
Sadhu Brother Teo, so I'd like to extend a token of appreciation to you. Sadhu.
I had to give this back to Brother Ganga. Sadhu, because she offered transport. Actually, it took him quite a while. 1 hour plus to reach my place. That's why we were late. He was 45 minutes late. Then luckily, on the way back, traffic was very smooth when we came back here. So, another almost an hour to bring us here. Then now, had to send me back. So, you all must thank him for his, what they call, sincerity and patience and hard work. This is the book. Is it the 12th September? 12th September. This is a very good book on meditation. It is a transcript based on the Thursday meditation class, 12th September 2013. Okay, we better do the sharing of merits and transfer of merits. So recall to mind all the good, beautiful mind states, all of your rejoicing, all your so-called meditative cultivation, then all of your miraculous action that you have done over the past 2 hours or so. We will dedicate all these merits and share them with the devas. Akasata chabomata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditva chirang rakkantu loka sasana ittavata chamehi sampanyan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sapasampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imena punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yāvā nivāna patiyā sādhu sādhu sādhu. Okay, thank you so much. Pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.